So we had seen the flood, and Noah comes out, and God gives a blessing, and God gives us commandments. We have Shev Mitzvos Nei Noach, that even non-Jews are responsible for, not to kill, to set up a court system. If a person murders and there are witnesses, then he gets killed. If he did it by mistake, he should go to exile. Otherwise, God's going to take retribution. Noach is given permission to eat from the animals. God makes a pact with man, with Keshet, the rainbow. The rainbow is one of the things that are created on Friday afternoon, Bein HaShemashos, the Mishnah in Avos says. And God makes a pact with man that he will never again bring a mabul to wipe out all mankind and all the living creatures. And God tells man, have more kids. Noah has three kids, Shem, Ham, and Yefes. Now Ham, we said, was the youngest, and when they were in the Teva and the Ark and they had a commandment not to have marital relations, Ham transgressed. Ham was with his wife, and from that he had his fourth son named Kenan. Kenan was a wicked person. Chazal teach us that the fashion in which a person has relations with his wife will affect how his kids are going to come out. Of course, every person has free will, but some people are born with certain inclinations. Chazal tells a person could be born red-blooded, could be born with an inclination to spill blood, and then he's going to have to channel that. He could be a murderer, or he could be a shochet, or he could be a moel. He could be one that circumcises. He could be a butcher. But he's going to have a need to deal with blood. So a person can see to it that his children are born with better inclinations, and our sages taught us that the thoughts, the way a person approaches his wife and having marital relations and the thoughts he has at the time when they're together, that's going to affect how the kid turns out, what inclinations he has. Obviously, the kid is still going to have free choice, but the question is, where is he starting from? What's he going to have to contend with?
Was Canaan conceived in the ark?
And Canaan was conceived in the ark. When Ham transgressed and the whole world was being destroyed, Ham went with his wife, and from that union, from their being together that night, we have Kenan. Ham had his fourth son. Now, when Noah came out of the ark, so he started dealing with the ground, started plowing and planting, and he came across a grapevine that had drifted out of Gan Eden, that had come from Gan Eden. And he planted that vine. He wanted wine. And when he planted that wine, our sages tell us that after he planted it, he took some sheep and he slaughtered them, and he took their blood, and in the morning he watered the grapevine with the blood from the sheep. And then in the afternoon he took a lion and slaughtered it, and he watered the vine with the blood of a lion. And then in the evening, he again went to the vine, but this time our sages tell us that he slaughtered a monkey. And
I read a midrash said the demon did that. Satan did that.
Oh, so wait, and then he watered it with that blood. So the midrash says that the Satan helped Noah. Maybe the Medrash means that the Satan did all of this and watered the plant that way. Maybe, could be.
Then he also used a pig at the end.
No, so that I didn't see. The Medrash is in Pirkei Reb Elezer, and that Medrash, Perek Chaf Gimel, you could look it up. I don't think it says that there.
At the end, he used a pig.
Oh, no, maybe that's not there. Over here, he quotes it in the Mora Afela. What's the source for that? Maybe it isn't Pirkei Reb Elezer, I don't remember. It is Pirkei Reb Elezer, Perek Chaf Gimel, yeah. Look it up there. Maybe there's a different version. Maybe you're right.
So then, where is...
Give him just a second. Let's just finish. We're in the middle of Medrash. So the Satan joins forces with Noach, and that night, that grapevine gives fruit.
One,
and they make wine out of it. Tremendous, tremendously strong wine. And as a result of the way they cultivated that grapevine, we see that when people drink wine, after 2 cups, they're mellow. They're like a lamb. They're like sheep. After 5 cups, they become fierce. They're like a lion. And after 10 cups, they start being like a monkey. That's what the Medrash says. It's a result of the way they watered that initial grapevine. And Noach drank from that wine and he became drunk. Yeah, what do you want to ask?
Wait, 2 things. Isn't it negative total that it was watered with blood? That would not be...
It's not forbidden. As I'll say that in the Beis Hamikdash, the Mishnah says, after all the sacrifices, they had a little stream running through the Beis Hamikdash, and the blood would be taken by that stream outside of the Beis Hamikdash, and it would be used as fertilizer by the gardeners. The gardeners had to pay a tax to the Beis Hamikdash because they got fertilizer from that blood. So it seems like there isn't a problem.
Doesn't only apply to, because that would be holy blood if it was just in the Beis Hamikdash.
And even so that the Gemara already discusses. How could you use holy blood? Is that blood holy? What could you do?
Then the second thing was back to...
They didn't amass that blood, but the stream naturally went to certain gardens. And then they said, hey, you guys are deriving benefit from this blood. It's fertilizer. You have to pay for that.
Okay. And back to Ham and Cohen. So then what are the appropriate things that someone should be thinking about with their wife when they're...
Oh, so that's a good question. The Gemara gives a list of thoughts and which are ideal and which are less than ideal.
What Gemara?
I think it's in the Nedarim. If I'm not mistaken, it's in the Nedarim, but you could look it up. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. I don't remember if it's Simen Reish Mem Beis. I think it's Simen Reish Mem Aleph, maybe, in Aruch Haim. Either Reish Mem Aleph or Reish Mem Beis. I think over there the Shulchan Aruch brings it. You want? We'll look it up in just a second. Okay, so the question was asked, what is considered a proper thought when a man is with his wife? So the Shulchan Aruch says that when a person is with his wife, he should approach it like one who's coming to perform a mitzvah. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm coming to take the time I'm supposed to give my wife. And I have a mitzvah to be with my wife, and I have a mitzvah to bring kids to the world to serve my Creator. And that's one positive thought. Another positive thought, the Gemara tells us that the last 6 months of a woman's pregnancy, the fact that the couple is going to be together is going to make the fetus be much better. The Gemara even says King Solomon, his mother told him, why do you think you're such a great man? Because I made sure to go into your father and I pushed in, even though I was pregnant, and I made sure to get in as many nights as I could, I guess. And that's why you're such an exceptional person. You owe it to me. So Chazal tells the last 6 months are useful for the child. And if a person has a thought, you know, I'm going to be together with my wife so that my child is going to come out better, that's another positive thought. Another thing that's positive is if he feels like if he won't be with his wife, he sees he's going to be looking at other women. So he should go home. The Gemara says that Abaye and Rava, there were two contemporaries. And when Rava passed away, so his wife came to the courthouse and she wanted them to give her the money that she was owed as a widow. And for a second, her sleeve went up or something, and she was an exceptionally beautiful woman. So Abaye went home and he told his wife, I want to be with you now. I saw an exceptional woman. I don't want to think about her. I want to think about only you. So that's considered a positive thought, that a person wants not to think or look at other women. So that's also something positive. Ideally, a person should contain himself, but that's also one of the positive thoughts. If a person just comes for the fun of it, that we don't consider something positive. A person shouldn't be looking to always eat as much as he feels like. Chazal taught us, Ever katan yesh ba'adam. A person has a small part in his body. Marivo, if you keep it hungry, savea, it'll be satiated. Masbio, if you try to keep it satiated, raiv, it'll always be hungry. Yeah, the approach has to be, give it the minimum. If you try to give it exactly what it needs, the Gemara says, David HaMelech made that mistake. He didn't know that rule. So he thought, I'll take enough, and I won't sin. And that's a mistake. There's a man never has enough. You never try to get your full. Wow!
Hey. Hello.
welcome back.
Shana tova.
Shana tova untuka. It's an honor.
Hey.
So Noach comes out and he plants this grapevine. And he drinks from it. And he gets drunk. And when he gets drunk, he gets naked. And he's in the tent. And his grandson, Canaan, comes into the tent. And he sees his grandfather naked. And he sees his grandfather drunk. And he doesn't know what's coming or going. So Canaan says, you know, my father had three kids. And we're going to have to divide the world, the whole world, between the three of us. You know, Adam had two kids. And that brought a world war because each one wanted the whole world for himself. My grandfather has three kids. That's enough. He doesn't think it's enough. He wants to have more kids. I got to take care of matters. So when his grandfather was drunk, he went over and castrated him. Noach was drunk, and his grandson came over and took care of matters for himself. Canaan's father, Ham, comes in, and he sees his father, Noach, naked, drunk there. Castrated. And he goes out, and he tells his brother, hey, Dad's drunk and naked in the tent. He's making fun of his father. Not only doesn't he have the derech eretz to cover him, but he goes out and he's not embarrassed to tell everyone. That's how Noach is. So Shem and Yefet, the other two brothers, Noach's other two sons, they took a blanket and they walked in backwards. They didn't want to see their father's private parts. And when they had to turn around to cover him, they kept their heads faced backwards so they wouldn't see him, and they covered him. Now, Noach awoke from his sleep, from being drunk, and he knew what happened. He knew what his little son had done. And he cursed Canaan. He said, Canaan is going to be a slave. Chazal tells that when he cursed him, he said, he's going to be black. And he's going to be a slave of slaves. The rest of the world is going to be servants to God. And he's going to be a servant to servants. He's going to be their slave. Blessed is Shem. Blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem. And with that blessing, he gave Shem the power of Nevuah. And that's why Shem's offspring, ultimately the Jewish people, had prophets again and again. And Canaan is going to be their slaves. And may God's beauty go to Yefet. Because I'll discuss what beauty was Yefet given as a reward for what he did. Some say it was the Greek language. Different opinions, what was the beauty that was given to Yefet. Some say it was the merit to build the second temple. Noach lived 950 years and he passed away. And there are a few things we're supposed to learn from Noach. We're supposed to learn to be God-fearing like Noach was, even when the whole world isn't. And Noach cared for all the animals. And in the end, the last story, we're left with Noach getting drunk, messing up with wine. Now we know that according to some opinions, the Eitz Hadas was wine. And Adam sinned with wine on Friday night. That's why we take wine and on Friday night, we make Kiddush on wine to show how we use wine for holiness. Wine, Yayin, is the gematria. Yayin is 70. It's the same gematria as Sod, the secrets. You'll see in Midrashim very often, the Gemara and Halacha are compared to bread. Because that's the basic sustenance of men. And the secrets of the Torah, that's compared to wine. Wine is something that you have to squeeze the grapes and hidden inside is the wine, and it ferments, and you get wine. Now, wine is something very important. The pasuk says in Shoftim, Yain, the grapevine, in the great mashal, in the great allegory that Yosam gives, he gives a whole story about how all the trees wanted to make a king, and they went to the grapevine, and the grapevine said, I can't take time to be king over everyone. Have I stopped giving off my great wine that makes God and people happy? And from that pasuk we learn that wine has this special attribute that it makes God and mankind happy. Wine has a special strength. Wine was used as an offering before God. They'd pour wine on the Mizbeach. Wine we use on Yom Tov to be happy. We're supposed to drink wine. Whenever we have a special blessing on a mitzvah, we honor it with wine, right? On a bris milah, we hold a cup of wine and we make the blessing on the milah. When we get married, so we hold a cup of wine and we make a blessing over the marriage, over the mitzvah of getting married. When we have special mitzvahs, we do them over a cup of wine. When we do pidyon haben, when we redeem our firstborn, Also, we hold a cup of wine, we make the blessing, and then we redeem the firstborn. So special mitzvos are done over a glass of wine when we bench. So ideally we should bench holding a glass of wine in our hand. It's a special mitzvah benching. We honor the mitzvah by doing it while holding a glass of wine, which we're afterwards going to drink. So wine has great potential for good. By the same token, wine has a potential for bad. People get drunk. When Ahasuerus and Haman, in the time of Purim, they sit down to decree to destroy the Jewish people, they sit down and they're drinking wine. Wine always has potential for bad. Chazal tell us that Yisro left a tradition for his offsprings. He said two things. Be nomads, never live in a home, always live in tents, and never drink wine. That was a tradition that Yisro's offsprings, they had from Yonadav ben Rechav. They had this tradition, and when the whole Jewish people were sinning during the time of the first temple, Yisro's family were good people. And Chazal say the reason was they had this tradition from their forefather. Now, I don't think that living in tents was what made them such exceptional people. It was the wine that had caused the rest of the Jewish people to keep going astray in sin. And Yisro's offsprings weren't drinking wine. So wine has a tremendous potential for good and also a tremendous potential for bad. On Purim, what we try to show is, look, I'm drinking wine, and when a Jew drinks wine, look at what positive things come out. But even on Purim, the Rama says, there are those opinions that say that the halacha is, you have to be careful. If you get drunk, then look at what's going to happen. We have two Amoraim, that one killed the other. Bad things could happen even when a Jew drinks wine. So don't get too drunk. Drink a little bit more than you're used to and go to sleep. So even on Purim, Ashkenazim, the Rama definitely seems to go that way. We drink a little more than we're used to, and then we go to sleep. But wine, we end up with this lesson from Noach as well. Noach drank wine, and also it brought bad things to the world. Now the Torah lists Noach's offsprings. Noach had Shem, Ham, and Yefes, and each one's children. Yefes had children Gomer and Magog. So when you hear about the great war of Gog and Magog, so you should know that Magog was one of Yefet's children. Madai, the Medes, one of Yefet's children was Madai. Yavan, the Greeks, one of Yefet's children was called Yavan. When we read about Ashkenaz, Germany, so Ashkenaz was a grandson of Yefet. So the German people, the Germanic tribes, came from a man named Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz means Germany. Ashkenaz is Germany, and that's a grandson of Yefet. When we read about Mitzrayim, so Mitzrayim was one of the sons of Ham. We say it in Ma'ariv every night, right? We say that God brought punishment on the land of the son of Ham. We're talking about the punishments that the Egyptians got, the Mitzrayim got. The whole Egyptian people came from a man who was called Mitzrayim, and he was the son of Ham. He was the grandson of Noah. Cush, they say that's Africa. That was a son of Ham. Canaan, the land of Canaan, the people of Canaan. Canaan was a grandson, Noah, a son of Ham. When we read about Nimrod, so Nimrod was a grandson of Ham. He was a great grandson of Noah. Now, we mentioned that God made Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, a special garment. And that garment, when they recognized that they were naked and they were embarrassed to walk around naked, so God gave them a garment to wear, and it was heavenly made, and all the animals and all the birds would come and bow down to whoever was wearing that garment. So they took that garment, Noah had it, they took it into the Teva, and when they left the Teva, so Ham took it out with him, and he gave it to his grandson, he gave it to Nimrod. People saw that where Nimrod went, all the animals and birds would come bow down to him. So they thought, wow, this is an amazing person. Nimrod recognized that God rules the world, but he said, I don't care, I'm rebelling. That's the name Nimrod. The shorish is Marad, rebelled. Nimrod didn't care, he rebelled against God, and he said, I'm king. And the people also, they said, why do we have to be God-fearing people? If I'm a God-fearing person, I can't marry my sister. When he marries a woman, I can't take her for myself. So the truth is, on that point, they were careful. But they wanted to serve idols, and they wanted to be less moral than God had told them to be. So they took Nimrod as their king, and they said, you be our king. And Nimrod started making idols of himself, and he had the people serve those idols. Nimrod took the people away from the Teva. Everyone had lived where they had come out of the ark, they were living there. He took them all to a land called Shinar. Shinar comes from the term Lina'er, to shake out. That's a land that was deep, deep down, where all the dead people from the Mabo had slid down into there. And over there, he started establishing his kingdom.
I think it was a midrash that said that everything was destroyed, even all the bodies, the bones, everything, including the bone and the spine that usually.
There is such a midrash, correct? That's true.
Because even that was destroyed, just so the remember, so we don't remember any of them, and none of them will be resurrected.
Yeah. Okay.
So we don't know.
So.
There
are conflicting midrashim there. There are opinions in the midrash. So Nimrod brought them all there, and he was the first king in the world. He ruled over the whole world, even though he was a grandson of Ham. He was cursed to be a slave. He wasn't supposed to be ruling the world, but he sought it to be king. So Nimrod was the first king, and with force he took over the land of Shem, his uncle. He took over the world, he conquered the world, and he started making the world serve idols of himself. He appointed himself as God, and he gave out idols, and everyone was supposed to worship him. Now, there was a man by the name of Ashur. Ashur was a son of Shem, and we know Shem was a tzaddik. After his father was castrated, so Shem became the new leader of the family. He was the leader of the way of God. He took over teaching people the ways of God. And he had a son who was a tzaddik named Ashur. When Ashur saw that everyone was worshipping idols, he didn't like it. So he left. And he went and he built a new city called Nineveh. And the idea behind the city of Nineveh is, here we serve God. We don't serve the idol of Nimrod. He left. Ashur, he saw he can't handle it. He left. He built the city of Rehovos. He built the city of Kalach, the city of Resen. He built a lot of cities. The rest of the world started being immoral. Started intermarrying. So much so that a whole people emerged that no one knew who their father was. And they were the people called Plishti. The Plishti people came from a bunch of women that no one knew who fathered all these kids. Shem had a son. He had Ashur, and he had a son. Named Arpachshad. Arpachshad had a son named Shelach, and Shelach had a son named Aver. So we're talking about four generations. His great-great-grandson was Aver. And Aver was the next big tzaddik. Aver was the one whom Shem taught, and they built the Beis Medrash together. They were both teaching the ways of serving God. And that's the Beis Medrash which we're going to encounter again and again in the next few parashios. That's the Beis Medrash known as Shem and Aver. Shem and his great-great-grandson named Aver. Now, Aver had a son who he called Peleg. And we're going to discuss a little bit later why he was called Peleg. Everyone got together, and everyone was talking the same language, and they were pretty much united. Nimrod told them, look, we're going to build a huge building. We don't know clearly from the psukim what was going on. We'll read the psukim and translate, and then we'll explain the way, the different ways that Chazal explained. Vayhibin asam mikedem. They all traveled from the east. Vayimtzu vika. They found some flat land, the Eretz Shinar, in the land of Shinar, which is later going to be known as Bavel. Vayeshvu sham. They all settled there. Vayomru ishal reyeyu. Each one said to his friend, Havanil binolivinim. Let's make ourselves bricks. We'll burn them, we'll strengthen them. But they used the bricks instead of stone because they were in this flat valley that there weren't any stones there. They had another way of putting the bricks together. Let's build ourselves a city. And we'll build a huge castle, a huge tower whose head is going to be in the heavens, v'naseh lanu shem. We'll make for ourselves shem. What does it mean, shem? We'll give ourselves a name. What does that mean? A name of what? Pen nafutz al pnei chol ha'aretz, lest we be scattered again over the whole land. V'yered Hashem lirot et hir ve'et amigdal asher banu bnei ha'adam. God came down to see the city and the tower that the sons of man built. V'yomer Hashem, God said, hin am echad v'safa echad lechulam. They're all one nation speaking one language. This is what they've begun to do. And if things go on this way, then they'll end up doing everything they want to do. Let's go down and mix up their languages. They won't understand one another. They'll each start talking a different language. God scattered them throughout the land. And they stopped building the city. Al ken karashma Bavel. That's why that city of Shinar became known as Bavel. Kisham balal Hashem sfat kol ha'aretz. Because that's where Hashem was balal. Bavel is mixed. God mixed up the languages of the land. And from there, God scattered them over the land. What's going on here? So one opinion says, they said, let's build a tower. God wants to destroy the land. Nimrod said, I'm going to be king. And God only has power with water. All we have to do is build a huge tower. And if God will want to bring a flood again, we'll just go up into that tower. So we don't have to worry about anything. We could do whatever we want, and we'll have that tower to escape. Another opinion says that they said, let's go up to the heavens and fight God. He's not doing a good job. He just destroyed the whole world. So we got to go up there, get rid of him. Another opinion says that they wanted to build a metropolitan area. They wanted to build a place where everyone sees the city. There's going to be great unification. Nimrod is going to rule the world, and no one's going to get away with being a God-fearing person. Everyone's going to have to serve the same idol. God came down and looked at what they were doing. God doesn't have to come down to see what people are doing. God does this to teach us that when we're going to judge something, we have to take a closer look. We have to come down, so to speak, and take a closer look. See what's going on. And God said, if this is what they're doing, then where are things going to end up? What does it mean, where are things going to end up? So, one understanding says, if the whole land is going to unite to serve idols, then those that are God-fearing are going to have nowhere to run. Avram is supposed to come out of this. Avram was living in that area. Avram's forefathers were there. And if everyone's serving idols and they're all united, then there won't be any place left for God-fearing people to live. I can't let this continue. This unification is for bad. So God scattered them and had them each talk different languages. According to one midrash, God turned some of them into monkeys.
I sort of have a question on this. Do you have the actual Chumash? The actual wording of the Chumash, where it says, where it mentions each nation and they had their language, and then, from Mesha going towards Sephar, mountain of to the east. These are the descendants of Shem, according to their families, by their languages, in their land, in their nation. And he goes, these are the families of Noah's descendants, according to their generation, the nation, and the nation. First it talks about each one having their own language, and then it says everyone had one language. So it's like, I'm wondering, what was that?
It's a good question.
Do you see what I'm...
100%.
Yeah, here, again. These are the descendants of Ham by their families, by their languages, in their land and in their nation. Then it says the whole earth was with one language. So, like,
right.
It's
a good question. It seems that this story is written out of context, meaning the Torah first said, I'll enumerate Noach's children. And when it enumerated them, it went a few generations down the road, past this story. And after it enumerated generation after generation, it enumerated for us all the nations that are going to come to be. So then it stopped and said, okay, let's reverse for a second. How did all these come out and have their own land? We know that Mitzrayim had his land, and Ashkenaz had his land, and each one had their language, and where did this all come from? So then the Torah says, let's retract for a second. This was the story. They built the tower, Nimrod was king, they were all speaking one language. So that's one understanding. That seems to be the understanding of Rav Yossi Bar Tachlafta in the Medrash Seder Olam Rambam. That's a very good question. You're right. It says each one has their language, and then you say everyone's talking the same language. What we also have to know is that it says each had their own lashon, and when it says they're all speaking one language, it says they're all safa echad. So what does that mean? Safa and lashon might not be the same thing. And another thing we have to notice is that it's possible that they had one common language, an international language, and there were other languages that were existent. The Kuzari says that Eiver was the one that remained with Hebrew. And that's why Avram's called Ivri, the tongue is called Ivris. It all goes back to Eiver, because when everyone lost their language, Eiver maintained Hebrew. There's a Medrash that has a different opinion, that there was Lashon HaKodesh, and there was Lashon Ivri, and there was Lashon Ashuri. There were a few languages already developed here. But the question is a very good question. So everyone's scattered, and here we see a great unification for bad, and that unification has to be dissolved. We said that Aver had a son, and he called him Peleg, because in his days, and that's another sign that's written out of order, in his days everyone got divided. So the Pasuk's already foreshadowing. It's telling us he was named Peleg because in his days everyone was scattered. So one opinion says that in his days Noach took all his kids and said, okay, let's divide up the land. Who gets what? And that's what it means. When Peleg was born, that was the year when they all divided the land between them, and that's why it was called Peleg. Peleg means division. The same Medrash, Seder Olam Rabba, says differently. It says Aver was a great prophet, and he knew that the year Peleg would die would be the year that they built this great tower, and God's going to punish them by dividing everyone all over the world and giving them all different languages. So when he was born, he called him Peleg, because Aver, as a prophet, knew that the year he would die, that's when ultimately all the land would be divided. The Pasuk says God came down to see the city and the tower that who built? The sons of men, Bnei Ha'adam. The Medrash says that's referring to which Adam? It's referring to first man. The Medrash says that these people were going the way their great-great-great-grandfather went. Who was that? Adam Arishon, first man, Adam. What did Adam do when God came to him and said, did you eat from the fruit? He said, it's her fault.
When you gave me
it. The woman you gave me, she made me do it. Ungrateful. She gave me before she got here, I was doing okay. So he was ungrateful. And these people were also ungrateful. God was giving them a lot of blessing. God was giving them everything. And here they say, we're not going to be appreciative. As a rule, Chazal taught us that we have to be appreciative of one another. And people today say, why should I say thank you to the bus driver? He's doing his job. Why should I say thank you to the janitor? He's doing his job. He's getting paid for it. The idea that we're trying to develop is that we should be appreciative of one another. Rav Hershel Schachter has a few shiurim on this. That when we're appreciative of one another, we're going to learn to be people who are appreciative and will appreciate God. When we won't be appreciative of one another, ultimately that leads us to not be appreciative of God. And then we rebel and we say, okay, he's not here. He's not a function in our lives. We're going to see that the great Pharaoh, when he starts off as king, he says, I don't know who Yosef was. Imagine a president saying that, I don't know George Washington. They had a great king named Yosef who saved the whole Egyptian economy, the whole Egyptian people. They wouldn't have had any food. And Pharaoh comes up and he says, never heard of him. He was not appreciative to Yosef. He wasn't appreciative to the Jewish people for what they had brought the the Egyptian people. What's the next step? Ultimately, he says, I don't know who God is. Never heard of him. We're all that way. And we have to be appreciative of people, and that'll lead us to be appreciative of God as well. Same thing, Avram. We're at the end of this week's parasha, we see that each person has their offsprings, until finally we have a man by the name of Nachor. Nachor, at the age of 29, has a son named Terah. He had a lot of other kids too. Terah had a son he named Avram, and he had another son which he named Nachor, like his father. So now we have two Nachors. And he had another son named Haran. So Avram's father is Terah. Avram's brother is Haran, right? Haran had two children. He had three children. He had a son named Lot. He had a daughter named Sarah. And he had a daughter named Milcah. So Lot, Sarah, and Milcah are Avram's niece and nephew, nieces and nephew. Right? Avram's brother is Haran. And Haran... Avram's brother is Haran and Nachor. And Nachor... Haran has three children, Milcah, Yiscah, and Lot.
When you say Abraham, do you mean
Abraham, the patriarch.
The patriarch of David's
son. Right.
Yeah. Nachor,
so Avram marries one niece after his brother Haran passes away, so now all the kids are orphaned. Lot, his nephew, is orphaned. Sarah, his niece, is orphaned. And Milcah, his niece, is orphaned. So he takes one of his nieces, Sarah, and his brother, Nachor, takes the other niece, Milcah, as a wife. Lot, the orphan, remains. Lot is going to come along with Avram. And Lot is going to get very wealthy as a result of being with Avram. And Lot is going to learn how to serve God as a result that he's with Avram. And at some point, Lot is going to say, you know what? I don't want to be with Avram. I don't want to be with Avram's God. So you ask yourself, hey, Lot, you don't like Avram, leave him. But why are you leaving God? A minute ago you were serving God, now suddenly you're leaving God? So it's the same concept. He was ungrateful to his uncle Avram, so it was very easy to take the next step to be ungrateful and not recognize that God's running the world. The Midrash says that when Avram was a little kid, he saw his father's business. His father had a business selling idols. An old man would come into the shop and tell him, my foot's hurting me. And he'd say, just a second, I'll get you just the right idol. And he'd bring one idol out. And Avram would wake up in the morning and see his father fashioning the wood and fashioning the stone. And in the evening, he'd say, yeah, that's a god. So he realized, hey, this doesn't work. So he tried arguing with his father, and his father wouldn't listen. So one day his father left him in charge of the shop, and people came in. And when an old man would come in, he'd want to buy an idol. So Avram would tell him, what kind of idol do you want? So the man would say, give me one of those. So he says, what do you mean? You're 72. That was just made this morning. You're going to take an idol that's younger than you? And every idol, he'd show the guy, come on, this is ridiculous. You're serving this idol? One man came in and he said, I just brought an offering. It's for the god. So when the man left, Avram took a hammer and he bashed up all the idols in the shop and he put in the hand of the biggest idol. And when his father came home, he said, what happened? So he said, you'd never believe it, Dad. A guy came in with an offering and all the idols wanted it. So there was a big fight. And the big one, well, he won. He bashed everyone up. So he's the only one left. You see the hammers in his hand? And you see the basket of fruits? They're all in front of him. So Terach said, Avram, are you a little crazy? What's wrong with you? You know these idols never move. So Avram said, Dad, you hear what you're saying? They never move. So how do you serve them? So Terach got upset. and he took his son to Nimrod the king. And Nimrod built a huge fire, and the furnace was so hot they couldn't even come close to it. And they took Avram and they placed him on a slab of rock, and the guards held the rock. They used it like a seesaw. They swung it back, they swung it forth, and they threw him into this big fire. Before he went in, so Nimrod called him and said, "Bow down." So Avram said, "No." So he said, "Bow down. What? Tell me what idol you'll bow to." So he said, "Why? I'm not going to bow to an idol." So Nimrod said, well, bow down to the stick." So he said, "Why should I bow down to the stick? The fire burns the stick." "So bow down to the fire." "Why should I bow down to the fire? The water puts out the fire." "So bow down to the water." "Why should I bow to the water? Animals drink water. Clouds carry the water." "So bow down to the clouds. The wind moves the clouds." "So bow down to the wind." And the conversation went on and on. And each thing Avram had an answer. And everyone's watching this little kid speak back to the greatest king, Nimrod, his ruler of the world, till finally he says, "Okay, got it, enough." And they heat up this furnace and they warn Avram, "Look, if you really believe in this God, better give in, otherwise you're going there." And Avram said, "Look, I don't know if I'll live. I don't know if I'll die. But this isn't the God. There is one God. He created the world." The Medrash says that it took Avram time to reach this conclusion. He began by thinking the greatest power in the world is the sun. I'll serve the sun. And then he saw at night the sun isn't around. Can't be the sun's running the world. So maybe the moon. But by day the moon isn't around. And he went one thing after another until he finally came to the conclusion, okay, there's a God, and I don't see him, and he's running the world. How did he know there's a God? So the Medrash says that if you're walking in the forest and you come upon a house, and you're looking, and you don't see anyone living in the house, but you see a candle lit in the house. So what are you going to say? "No one's living here. There ain't been no one around. That candle lit itself." You don't say that. Same thing, you look at the world. God gave us the sun. Everything you see in the world has a purpose. There's a famous story about one of the Bali Musar who had a friend who became an atheist. So his friend came to him one day, and he asked him, "I see this beautiful painting you just made. How'd you do it?" So he said, "I didn't do it." "What do you mean you didn't do it?" "I didn't do it. The cat came in when I was out, knocked over all the different paints, and this one took the exact shape of a man, and that took the exact shape of the sun, that took the exact shape of the heavens, and that took the exact shape of the street he's walking on. Are you kidding? I didn't do it." So, "Are you crazy? Of course you did it. The cat can't do that." He said, "What do you mean? Think about what you're saying. This whole world, everything is built just so. Look at everything in the world. It's built to fit exactly. You look at each tree, the thought that goes into it, each leaf. Everything's created exactly. If the sun were a little different, if the earth's axis were a little different, if the rotation of the earth around the sun weren't an ellipse, it were an exact circle, the more we know about science, the more we see with what precision everything was created to work exactly the way it does. Look at today we know the genome, right? So we see how each little part of the DNA, if it were a little off, how mutated a person would be. Today we see the little things." So he told them the same thing, that's the world. And that's what Avram also said. He said, you walk in the forest, you see the house, you see the candle lit. You're not going to say there's no one around, no one lit that candle. So you look at this world, don't say there's no God. And Nimrod, you ain't he. So Nimrod had Avram thrown to this fire. Now, at the same time, Avram had a brother named Haran. And he was a pretty good guy. Haran had all these wonderful kids. Sarah was Haran's daughter. Haran had heard all of Avram's arguments, and he was wondering, maybe Avram's right, maybe not.
"I'll wait."
So Haran said, "I'll wait, yeah." "I don't know." And Avram was thrown into the furnace, and he wasn't killed. God made a miracle, and nothing happened to him. The Medrash says that that's why Nimrod is later going to be called Amraphel, because Amar vehipil es Avram toch haKivshon. He said, he commanded, and they had Avram dropped into the Kivshon. So Amraphel is short for Amar vehipil. He said, he commanded, vehipil, and he had him thrown into the furnace. And Avram lived. Haran, on the other hand, didn't really believe. when he saw the great miracle happen to Avraham, so he said, yeah, throw me in too. So they did, and he was finished in a second. There's a medrash that says that when Avraham was thrown in, the fire leaped out and killed Haran. So people wouldn't say, you know, Haran's the righteous one. It's his merit that's keeping Avraham alive in there. So Avraham lasted. Now, everyone knows the medrash that when Avraham was 3 years old, he recognized that God created the world. There are medrashim that say it was when he was 30-something, 40. There are medrashim that say he was much older. And it took him a long time till he recognized God's running the world. And that's something we have to remember, that God doesn't expect us to reach every conclusion in a day. So today I'm not where I should be. I'm working on it. I have to be working on it seriously. But I don't have to take myself to task for the fact that I'm not there yet. No one got there in a day. Everyone has to work on themselves and move forward. But everyone also has to remember that everyone that preceded us also had to work. That's why the great Talmid Chacham of the previous generations didn't like biographies. They said, you read a biography of a great person, even a big tzaddik, all they tell you are his success stories. No one tells you the days he woke up late. No one tells you how many days he couldn't focus on his learning. No one tells you how many times he had it hard. Mm-hmm. You read it and you think, wow, in order to be a great person in Judaism, from the time you're five, you got to know everything. It doesn't work that way. No one had it that way. Everyone who was great had their ups and their downs. And Avraham also took him time to reach the level he was on. Once he reached that level, the greatness of Avraham was that he didn't fall. He was tested 10 times and he lived up to those tests. But even Avraham, we're going to see, had things that he messed up on. Avraham wasn't perfect. No one's perfect. He lived up to the tests. We have tests in life, and every test is an opportunity to move up. So Avraham lived up to them. And when he was offered to be thrown into the furnace, I don't want to be thrown into the furnace, but you know what? I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to serve idols. God is the only God, and he said so, and that's the way it is. Avraham takes Sarah. Sarah is also called Yiska. Now, Avram, in the beginning, is known as Avram. The people of Aram recognized him. You're our great leader. And Sarah was called Sarai. Now, Sarah was one of the most beautiful women ever created. That's why she's called Yiska, because everyone would take a good look. Socha means to see. When Sarah would walk down the street, everyone would turn their heads. Terach recognizes that this isn't the place for him to live. Can't stay with all his idol worshippers. So he takes his grandchildren, Lot, who's an orphan now, and he takes his granddaughter, Sarah, who's now Avram's wife, and they leave Ur Kasdim. They're traveling towards Canaan. They come to Haran, and they dwell there. Terach decides he's not leaving, and Avram decides, God tells him, go to the land of Israel. So Avram leaves his father behind in Haran. But the Torah doesn't want to advertise that. The Torah doesn't want to advertise that Avram left his old father alone in the city of Haran. So the Torah writes, the parsha ends, Terach died at the ripe old age of 205. And then the next 6 parsha, we hear the commandment that Avram was told, go to the land of Israel. So you read it, it seems like, okay, Terach passed away. Now Avram gets a commandment, go to the land of Israel. But if you do the math, you recognize that Avram went to the land of Israel and his father was still alive a long time till he reached that ripe old age of 205. And only then did he die. But the Torah, like, covers it up. The Torah tells it to us, but in a way that people won't see that Avram left his old father alone. God told him to leave. He had to go. But on the other hand, we don't advertise that he left his father.
Why didn't he bring his father?
His father didn't want to leave. His father wanted to stay there.
Start a new idol company.
Okay, any questions still here?
Fresh customers.
We say in Pirkei Avos that there were 10 generations from Adam to Noach, 10 generations from Noach to Avram. The world wasn't doing good. After Adam was created first man, so things were okay for a while, and then it's 2 sons, one murders the other. Things are okay for a while, and people start serving idols and intermarrying. Noah, one man's left with his family, and the world is demolished. We see that shortly after Noah is saved, the world starts going downhill again. It takes 10 generations till we see Avram coming to the scene. And there are always sparks of light. I think that one of the messages we should take from the parasha is a message for chinuch. On the one hand, we have to make the most of every day. We have to give as much love as possible to our kids, as much caring, and show them the right way. And chanuch lenar al pi darko chazal taught us. Each child needs different things at different times. We have to understand what each kid needs. On the other hand, we also have to have patience. And maybe that's one of the lessons we see. It took 10 generations, but God didn't give up. God didn't say, everything's bad again. They're serving idols. They anointed one king, and that king says, I'm the king, I'm the God. They all united in one little city to serve an idol. God doesn't say, that's it. The world can't exist like this. We have to have patience. One of the biggest mistakes that parents make in chinuch is that they don't have patience. They want to see their kid successful today. And they can't stand any day when they don't see their kid thriving. So, yeah.
Could I give you my mom's phone number? tell her what you just said.
You have to remember it when you get married. Any questions still here?